Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
Oh, and me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Gotta mix it up. Maysoon, I went to a place I've never been before.
What?
Residence Project SF over there at Larkin and Sutter Street.
I heard about this recently.
And I gave a little talk for Painting Salon, the Painters Talk series run by Sarah Tebow and Kate Nelson.
Oh.
That's a great series. Go to that. Margaret Tedesco is always there.
Is she always there?
And she does not wait for the Q&A.
Ooh.
Because she's got burning desires.
I love her.
She really gets to the crux of things.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I moderated a little talk between Stuart and I moderated a little panel with Stuart Pittman and Marcella Pardo Ariza, and they were fantastic, and I loved every second of it.
How did the slide pairings go?
Pretty well, I think.
Kate did this great pairing of their slides
for
the lecture.
We did a remix. Based on a talk I saw that was organized by KRM Mooney, where my favorite art historian, Julia Bryan Wilson, and Josh Fott did a talk, but Josh sent his slides to Julia, and she remixed them without him knowing mm-hmm. how they'd be organized.
Mm-hmm. And didn't tell him.
Right. That place is very interesting. They have art studios. There's an upstairs and a downstairs. The bathroom's great. I don't know why you need such a giant mirror to see yourself when you're on the toilet, but that's cool.
When you're on the toilet, it's like right in front of you?
It's beside you, but it takes up like a whole wall, but that's cool.
So you can see yourself sitting on the toilet.
No judgment. No judgment on that. But they got a lot of plants and a gallery space, and the gallery was the show there I actually really liked. The only artist whose name I remember is Greg Ito. Had some very nice paintings, including one Maysoon with some ocean scenes with a sinking ship. And you know, my number one favorite kind of art is paintings of the ocean. So
that and of houses?
Paintings of houses. Anyhow, Maysoon, it's a great show. The show is called Expats, and it's artists that moved to LA from San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, it's okay.
Forget everything about it, but it's a great show. Go over there. Check that place out. It's very interesting.
Residence SF.
Uh-huh. At Larkin and Sutter Street.
Cool.
I think I even remember the address.
Maybe I'll go tomorrow. It's open during the day?
1050 Larkin Street.
I went to this dance performance by this choreographer named Kyle Abraham. It was like my mouth was like agape. The whole time I was just like dumbfounded by how incredible the movement was. What was really, really interesting about this particular performance is that the audience could choose to listen to sound or not. So you could listen to the soundtrack via headphones, or you could just watch the performance in silence. And that was pretty interesting. I got a tip off from friends who went the night before I went saying that they listened to it in silence and they would recommend it in sound. It was really difficult for them to be in
silence.
To
hear it? Oh, okay.
No, there's no sound.
They said, we listened to it without sound. We listened to silence.
We watched the performance without sound.
Try the sound. That's what
they're
they came
like,
up
try
with.
The sound.
Right.
So I tried the sound and it was, I think with sound was great, although I really wanted to go back the next day, of course, and watch it again without the sound.
You didn't like just pop them off for a quick sec, just get a taste.
I didn't.
So what was the sound? Music?
Yeah. I mean, it was composed music by, I think, a friend of the choreographer's.
Strings, voices, brass, timpani.
I want to say ambient. So like electronic.
Synthesizers.
Yeah, synthesizer-y. Okay. I think there might have been some classical music at some point in there.
Okay.
But it changed. And I think the technology that they used, there was definitely a sound booth. And so I think there was someone in the booth mixing the sound live.
Oh.
So that the appropriate sound or piece would start with the appropriate dance piece.
Because the dancers couldn't hear it?
No, that's the thing. Sorry.
Whoa,
that's me,
dude.
Sorry if I'm not explaining it well.
So the dancers didn't have headphones on.
So Kyle Abraham came out before.
Shit.
Right. So he came out before the piece started and made an announcement and sort of talked about the sound and said the dancers have never heard the sound. They didn't perform. They didn't rehearse with the music. They've never heard the music. But he had a friend develop a music score for the piece. Well, not in secret. I think he was just experimenting. And so the
composer has seen the dance.
That's my understanding. It seemed,
but the dancers had not heard the composition. Right.
And they weren't performing to any music. They were performing in silence.
Right.
So it was just, it just made me, of course, really think about how sound is so influential to like all of our every moment experiences, you know, just wherever you are. But the work was just gorgeous, you know, is the movement.
So what were they doing? How many dancers were there?
Oops. Okay. Four women and two men.
What were they wearing?
They were wearing all different kinds of outfit. Not different kinds of outfit. One woman was wearing this gorgeous sort of like floral dress that was just very plain. It was like a summer dress. There wasn't anything special about it. The men were wearing, I think, t-shirts and just pants, comfortable pants to dance in.
Dancing pants.
Well, I mean, they were
those
like
kind of high pants.
They would be kind of like a chino,
like
let's
say. Like a capri.
Say. No.
What's a chino go down to? How far?
Your ankle.
Oh, never mind.
Your ankle. So there's like a t-shirt with like a button-down shirt that was open over it. So it was very casual. It was mm-hmm. like on the street, walk, you know, wear whatever you would wear outside. And then, but slowly each piece, they kind of like shed a layer of clothing.
Until they're naked?
No one ever ended up naked.
Oh, okay. Underpants?
Underpants. So like this.
Topless?
Not topless. Okay. No. So the women were wearing their sports bras and underwear.
Okay.
Generally kind of like in the nude-ish color.
What was the title of this piece again?
The title of this piece was Dearest Home.
Huh.
And I was just thinking about it. The relationships between the dancers was so, like, they responded so well to one another. Like, they were truly dancing with the other person with awareness of the other body and space, which I feel like, you know, most companies that are professional can do that, but there was like a real sort of like, it just felt really emotionally connected to me. Like, even if they were well across a room from another with their backs to each other, you could just really feel this really tight bond. And I don't know if that was, it was just really beautiful. I mean, there were so many different emotions that they were playing with, you know, also. So there was like this, there was like fragility and.
How did they like depict that? Because did some people fall over and then the other people catch them?
No.
Did they start to fall over and then hop up?
No. No, there weren't any like dance tropes like that, you know?
That's cliche, they were, apparently.
And I believe the director said this, or the choreographer, I think that the dancers have a big part in sort of developing the piece with him. Like, they're doing movement that's familiar to their bodies. And the one thing that was really incredible is like the lunges, you know what a lunge is?
Where you have one leg with a bent knee out forward and one leg behind straight.
They could go into the deepest lunges.
Like where their crotch was fucking touching the ground.
Like a few inches.
They were just dragging their crotches all across
being
the floor.
A jerk. Oi. Honestly.
Go on.
Talking about this with Kate.
Picture a deep lunge.
A
listener.
Really, really deep lunge that they could sort of go into with like absolute grace and control and weightlessness and then really come out of right away without like, honestly, if I'm in dance class and I'm in a fucking lunge and I have to sit there for a second in a lunge and then like move into a completely like a very opposite type of movement, like a whether or not you're jumping or you're inverting upside down. It's like, I gotta be like, huh. I gotta like half myself out of the fucking lunge. You know what I mean? So it was really, I was like, wow, they have like such control of their bodies. I don't know. It was beautiful. I would have liked to have seen it again.
Here at Real Time and Space in beautiful Oakland, California, speaking to Layla Weaver, or...
So the American pronunciation is Layla Weaver. You know, most people can recognize it phonetically, sometimes not. And there's a portion of my Liberian family that says Layla Weefwe. It's kind of like a inner family battle.
Oh, right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not nice.
Does it come up a lot?
No. Only when we're all together, which is rare.
Do you have family still in Liberia?
Lots.
So is it like some of the family, all of the family in Liberia, some of them say Wifwe and some of them say Wifer? Yeah. Or is it like the folks who live in this country per se?
It's the folks that mostly live in America.
Because
they say like Wifer with a Liberian accent, which I'm not going to do on air.
Right on. You're from Oakland but grew up in Berkeley?
Or do I have it backwards? I was born in Berkeley, grew up in Oakland.
There we go.
Yeah.
Layla is an artist,
yeah,
a curator.
I'm gonna finish introducing you.
Your background is in film.
I got my first degree in film.
Uh-huh. Photography also.
Yeah.
What made you go into video, to like arty video?
Well, I was working in LA for a while after graduating, and the film industry down there at the time sucked. It was like 2011. You know, it was before blackness started to reestablish itself as a force, and people were still treating us shitty, particularly in the film industry that's dominated by white men. Yay. Mm-hmm. And I was often the only black woman on set, and people would be like, hey, let's give Layla our trash.
Fuck.
I'm like, that is not my job. What do I say in this situation? I'm like 21, just graduated, kind of timid, but I felt super uncomfortable. And so I came back and I got a job doing commercial photography. And then I applied to Mills, and I knew that I wanted to make video work that was outside of the classical Hollywood format. Although I still have a passion for cinema, just all kinds of cinema, international, Hollywood, everything. And I would say that cinema still informs my work in a really, really huge way.
Yeah, I think you could definitely tell, and your shots are very cleanly composed.
Oh, yeah.
I think I just didn't want to. I feel uncomfortable when I am pressured to work within a specific structure. Anything that gives me room to break out of that format, I feel happy with, you know.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about your work? Your MFA show, mm-hmm, at Mills.
I was going to say you had a really strong vision for that particular installation.
Mm-hmm. At the time I was at Mills, a lot of my work focused on language and deconstructing language as like the most powerful structure. And I was interested in how bodies, specifically black bodies, because that's the body that I'm present in, right? Mm-hmm. I can't be present in any other body. I'm interested in the way we have to navigate space and negotiate space with words. So it's like every day I'm like dodging the words that people throw at me. And that feels very violent sometimes. Sometimes it's, you know, I mean, it evokes different emotions, but there is definitely an impact, psychological, emotional, physical. And I wanted to illustrate that in video. And with that show in particular, I used these objects. I used apples, I used tomatoes and blood oranges. Mm-hmm. And the common theme in those fruits, at least the color. And I wanted to use fruit that was very fleshy, mm-hmm, pulpy, felt very bodily. And I wanted to manipulate them to sort of just investigate and make people feel in a very visceral way how it feels to have a word like placed on you. And so I had these fruit being manipulated in different ways, injected, and, you know, like ink was seeping out of them, yeah, and pulled apart.
Mm-hmm. And then also they were accompanied by those like embossed prints.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was called the Site of Impact. So it was a series of black and white prints with the words, with a series of prepositions paired with the words black and white. So it was black in, black out, black on, black off, white in, white out, white on, white off. What else am I missing? Up and down, black up, black down, white up, white down. And so I wanted there to be, as you move through the prints, just this feeling of not just movement, but like, when you think of white in or white down, I mean, there's pressure implied. in the same way that the words are, the same way that the words are applied to the paper through letterpress. It's, we use metal type for that project. And it was pretty important to us to use like letterpress and specifically metal type because it was the best way to illustrate how an impact can physically appear on a body. So in that project, the paper acted as the body mm-hmm. that was receiving the impact.
What's nice, I think, about that particular piece is that the paper's alternated, right? Black, mm-hmm. white, black, white.
Mm-hmm.
So as a viewer, as you're walking by reading it, you're reading, I can't remember if the text was the same, like if it was black up, black down, white up, white down. So you're immediately confronted with how you as a viewer, how language, because of the color of the paper also, like how you're, and the text you're reading.
Yeah, it plays with expectation. Like, what did
you
think
when you read black up and then the very next thing is white up? It's like you have,
but it was also white up on black paper.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it also alternated color with word.
Okay. Yeah.
It's
but that's interesting because I think as a viewer, you're immediately like confronted with your own thoughts on those words.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say that it was inkless. Mm-hmm. The big part,
right?
Because from far away, you can't tell that there's anything on the piece of paper, and people often thought that there was nothing. And most people, when they walked up to it, they said, "Oh, there is something." So it forces viewers to really engage with this flat surface.
So who was your collaborator?
Oh, right, my collaborator on that project was Shiloh Gines.
From the book arts department at Mills. Yes,
she recently graduated with her MFA in the book art department at Mills. Yeah. And I studied, after I graduated, I took another semester and studied under Kathleen Walkup for a few months. And we sat in the Heller room and we looked at a series of artist books, and she basically just laid out the history of art, the book as art, you know, as an art object. And blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. They have an incredible collection in the rare books room of the Mills College Library.
And I think with Kathleen Walkup, it was sort of a give and take. Like, we learned from each other because I was pushing her to tell me more about the black printers that I had never heard about. And she's like, you know what? I haven't heard about them either. Let's do some digging. And Amos Kennedy is one that came up. I don't know if you know Amos Kennedy. He prints in Alabama right now, and he's a letterpress printmaker, one of very few in the country. But letterpress comes from Europe. It's a very European art form, and it has to do with access to plates and this big Vandercook SP20, SP15, whatever, you know. Black people didn't have access to that shit. You know, and I wanted to know how, or if it existed at all, like where they were, where these black printers were, and how they were making work, and what they were saying in their work, and we didn't find much.
So what else are you working? Are you still doing the Kala Fellowship right
and
now?
And so while I have been at Kala, I've been exploring letterpress printmaking. I also learned how to screen print. Which I, you know, it's super easy, but I didn't know how to do it.
You're kind of a neat freak. Has that been...
What?
Has that been hard doing... Because, like, silk screening can get really messy.
You and Layla had, a year overlap at Mills?
No, we didn't have
zero overlap. Oh, okay.
I think we're both just nosy people. And so we just, you know, we're up in each other's business.
And we're studio mates here at RTS.
So. Oh, right. So you're around.
Well, mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's helped you kind of embrace, like, being dirty?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think maybe you won't be surprised, but my new work is pretty messy.
Oh.
Actually.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I love your very tidy work as well, but... I think it's always fun when somebody kind of lets loose a little.
I don't know what the like art rule is for this, but like I have a really intensive project developing right now, and you know, should I talk about it? Should I not talk about it?
Yeah, is it going to make you feel really vulnerable and uncomfortable?
Everything.
Because that makes
everything
great
does.
Radio.
No.
Everything does. Okay, so this is, I mean, it's kind of an extension of the work I did at Mills. Not quite, but I'm still deconstructing language as a structure. And language, kind of similar to the body, the Black body, is kind of like a recombinant for me. And a recombinant in the sense that it's deconstructed and constantly reconstructed and reconstructed through language specifically. Think about all the different ways Blackness has had to redefine itself by other people's words and concepts. Mm-hmm. And this project deals with the Blackberry. So have either of you heard The Blacker the Berry, the Sweeter the Juice?
Yes.
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's funny. When I ask people that question in studio visits, the answer varies. So, yeah.
Well, we're talking about the song by Kendrick Lamar. No.
That is one also, iteration. Yeah.
Is it a poem first?
No, it was just I feel like I've heard that
in reference to.
Oh, just fruits. the like saying,
right?
Yeah, just
yes,
the saying.
Yes, I have heard it as a saying.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought up the song too. It's a saying that's that's like frequented in pop culture, mm-hmm. like Kendrick Lamar. It's been in like a ton of Black movies, and it sexualizes and like somewhat celebrates the Black body mm-hmm. and its darkness and its pigment. But then there's also this culture that creates shame and like condemns the Black body in a way.
And it kind of sets it up as like something that like has something to be extracted from it, like how you extract juice.
Yeah. And so my current project, there's a title. It's called Blackberry Pastoral Symphony Number 1. There are a bunch of different moving parts, and like my other work at Mills, it takes inspiration from not just cinematic language but poetry also. And that's something that I didn't highlight in my last work. The title This There Hour mm-hmm. Came from a Claudia Rankine speech from AWP, and It's from a line in her poem, Rage and Fury, and she says, "In daylight, this right to righteous rage doubles down the supremacy of white in this way." So in the presentation, she had their way, and then she changed it as she was speaking. She like recited the poem, and she said, "This right to righteous rage doubles down the supremacy of white in our way," because everyone is implicated in racism, not just white people. And so I like the way that she was able to transform her own poem and shift the language just live mm-hmm. like that. And I think with a lot of my work, that is what I aim to do, is to like reconstruct the way that we use language and question the ways that we use language in our daily lives. But the Blackberry work, well, I've been thinking about Blackberries for a really long time, maybe since before I got the residency. I wasn't sure exactly how to like talk about it. And then this poem sort of just showed itself to me. It's Youssef Kamanyaka's Blackberries poem. And in the first line, he says, "They left my hand like a printer's or a thief's before a police blotter." And I was like, oh my God, he referenced printmaking. This is golden. It's like, you know when you find something in your research and you just like shit your pants?
Yes.
I had that moment.
Can you say the line one more time?
"They left my hand like a printer's or a thief's before a police blotter." And then he references the Blackberry later on in the poem as terrestrial sweetness. That's where the title Blackberry Pastoral came from, because A, it's referencing music, and it's referencing the landscape, like nature.
Yeah.
And so the Blackberry as a terrestrial body and Blackness as a terrestrial body, like coming together and just in this single object, the Blackberry, and just how these different concepts come together so seamlessly. And Pastoral, just, it has its own structure as like a musical form. And the symphony also references structure. I mean, there are four parts usually to a symphony. Well, that's in sonata form. And there's a piece of music that also inspired the project. And it's all sort of weaving together in this really cool way. It's this song by Florence Beatrice Price, who was the first African-American woman to be recognized as a symphonic composer. And so I'm like, okay, here's this Black woman who created a symphony. Here's the Blackberry that is this iconic Black object. Here's this poem that is referencing printing through the Blackberry. So the Blackberry, I mean, I'm seeing it as like this object that represents sensuality and like equal parts sensuality and like disgust. Right, it's a sexualized object, and I think at the top of that is the Black woman's body, right? Because I usually hear it referenced when it's like toward a Black woman. If you've seen the movie Friday, there's a scene where this woman is like running and her like butt is bouncing and like boobs are bouncing, and then like anyway, Ice Cube and Chris Tucker say, damn, you know, like the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's typically how that line is used in reference to Black women. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, here's this Black woman who created this piece of music. Mm-hmm. So for me, the Blackberry does represent a Black woman's body, a set of prints using blackberries as the ink. Yeah, and also referencing the body in the prints. I don't know if you caught any of like the boomerang videos that I posted on Instagram, but I did a series of videos with like 10 different people, and I had them all wearing different shades of tan, yellow, white shirts. And I had them all interact with blackberries in different ways. So I would give them a list of words and actions and play this song by Florence Beatrice Price to influence the way that they interacted with it. And it felt really like antebellum while I was doing it. And I have all this footage of these people like consuming and like interacting with the Blackberry in this really like grotesque and beautiful and sexual way. And it's, yeah.
Shit, it's when's the show again?
July 27th.
Like, I already wrote it down.
Go to that. How was collaborating? We're always very interested in collaborations and people's collaborating tactics.
I love collaboration. I only like to collaborate with people when you have had painstakingly long conversations about what you want to do. You can't just go in with an idea and be like, hey, let's collaborate on this thing. You really have to, like understand each other. You have to talk about painful shit.
That's actually really good advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you have to have some creative symbiosis. If you're going to make something that makes sense.
And you don't want to be like neck deep in a project and realize the person you're collaborating with has some like deep like conflicts with your whole idea of what the project is.
Exactly.
Supposed to be.
Yeah. So it takes like a month, 2 months, 3 months. It depends on the project. Like I was working on a film project recently, and me and the director who wrote the screenplay and I did the cinematography, we talked about it over 6 months. We shared images, we shared articles. I mean, it was a really sharing relationship. And now we just look at each other and we know that we've both seen a film recently, and we kind of understand what we both think about it. It's weird. And I think it's an intense and fun and vulnerable place to be in with someone else that you have never collaborated or created with before. You're like making a baby.
It is like making a little baby.
You're getting into a conceptual bed.
Oh, with this person. That's heavy. All right. Okay. I feel like we could talk for 9 more hours.
Probably.
So many deep things that we have touched on.
Yeah.
And we have only scratched the surface.
Yeah.
But we always like to ask our guests if there is anything else you would like listeners to know.
Yes. So I'm a part of this thing called The Black Aesthetic, and we screen films. The project started with Ryan Austin Dennis and Christian Johnson, and they wanted to add a woman. Rightfully, because there's enough men in film. Mm-hmm. So we're right now we're on our season 2, and the last screening is pretty soon. It's tomorrow, so no one will make it once they hear this. But season 3 is coming.
Awesome.
Bigger and better than ever. And there's a publication that will be available for purchase, and that includes an essay, a critical film essay by yours truly. Mm. There are some photographs by other Black artists, designed by Soleil Summer, a bunch of essays that were responding to the films that we screened in season 1. So this is the season 1 publication.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. And yay, as always, congratulations. All right. If anybody wants to give any feedback about anything you've said, heard, seen on the show or off the show, you can give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. You can tweet us at @PineTreePodcast. We have an undisclosed social network page. Find that. And anyhow,
what?
But until then, from the bridge
to the other bridge,
to the island in between, this has been Congratulations Pine Tree.